morning. Welcome to your Wednesday. I'm Melissa Carter, your host for She Persisted. I have been fighting a cold for days. I've been fighting it, I think, since Friday. And I've neti potted the hell out of my nose. And I haven't fallen over the cliff of getting a cold, but it's just right there on the edge. So maybe it's fall allergies that are trying to get me down. But man, I feel like I'm getting a cold. So if I start to sound a little stuffy as the week progresses, I have fought a valiant fight. You know, with my kidney transplant, I have a lower immune system. So you would think I'd get sick more often, but I actually usually take better care of myself now and I don't get as sick. And so that's why I neti pot. But I can't take medicines for a cold. So I can't take a decongestant. So if I get a chest cold or a head cold, I can't take something to dry me up because that's bad for my kidney. So I have to suffer through it. I have to, you know, feel it all raw. So that's why neti pot. What else do I do? Sometimes I gargle. I talked about tea yesterday, how I drink tea. So I'm trying to drink more tea throughout the day. That's the beauty of drinking tea that's not caffeinated as opposed to coffee, like we discussed, because I can drink it throughout the day and not get jittery. So that's what I've been doing. What have you been doing? I did want to share with you an event that I was a part of recently, just because I think it's a cool event. I mean, I'm not obviously trying to sell tickets because it's already happened, but it is an event that not only happens in Atlanta, but it happens in other parts of the country. So if it's in your area, I would love for you to learn about it and participate. It's called Canstruction. And it's a play on construction, obviously, but it's purposely called Canstruction. And it is various architectural firms that come together and compete in structures that they build and design, and it can only be from cans or non-perishable foods. And when they're done with the competition, the structures are on display throughout the city. And then when they're done with the competition, they donate all the materials to the Atlanta Community Food Bank. And in other cities, whatever food bank there is, that's where they donate the food. It is a really neat thing because they spend most of the year having to map it out and design it. Then they get the volunteers to come do it. And then when it's done and they do the competition, then they have an event, like a cocktail event, which is what I participate in. I MC the event, and they have, you know, it's a friendly competition. I hand out the awards and for different things. Like, there's an award for most cans used. There is an award for best meal. So not only are they limited in the fact that they have to use non-perishable items, but they have to look at the calorie content and the balance of the food within the structure, meaning they have to be able to feed a family a balanced meal with the food they use in the structure. So they can't just do all bean cans and get away with it because, you know, you can't just eat on beans. So they have to take into consideration there are families that this is what they depend on for their meals. So they have to feed them well. And if, let me give you some examples in the past of some of the structures. Like, for instance, there was a mannequin head. It's almost like a head. And then built it completely out of cans. There has been the Millennium Falcon from Star Wars, and it was built completely out of cans. There has been, so many things. Here in Atlanta, we have a lot of films that are made here. So I think at one time, we were making more films on location here in Georgia than they were in Hollywood. And there was the Atlanta Film Institute made a design of cans where it was almost like a reel of film with a peach, because Georgia peach is our symbol. And it was just, it's just these really elaborate, cool displays. Well, this year, some of the ones that I remember, Apollo 11, they had a replica of Apollo 11 made from cans. Groot coming, you know, the baby Groot coming out of the pot from Guardians of the Galaxy. They had that. And all they have to do is they have to kind of tie it into hunger. So, you know, usually the title has something to do with it. So, like, for instance, there was one that depicted gaming. So there was like a Space Invaders alien, and it said game over for hunger, you know. So if you incorporate hunger in the title, it kind of ties it all in together. But some other structures from this year for Canstruction here in Atlanta, hunger on my mind. So, like, instead of Georgia on my mind, hunger on my mind. And the cans depicted the shape of Georgia, and then again a peach to symbolize Georgia. Here at the Botanical Garden in Atlanta, we have this earth goddess that is a really cool display. And they depicted that in cans. There was one called Atlanta United Against Hunger, because our soccer team is Atlanta United. And there's a huge soccer ball that was made completely out of cans. But my favorite, the one that I voted for, because the public can also vote on these on their Facebook page, the one that I loved and the one that won several awards was Hunger, a state which will live in infamy. Obviously, FDR's, you know, famous speech about World War II, but it was Pearl Harbor, the Pearl Harbor Memorial, all made in cans, sitting on a glass table, and underneath that glass table, the USS Arizona. So if you've ever been to the Pearl Harbor or the USS Arizona Memorial, there is a white structure that sits on top of the water. Underneath the water, the USS Arizona is still there. I mean, it's still leaking oil, believe it, from its tank. But it is underneath the water, and you can see that under the water. And at construction, they depicted under this glass table the USS Arizona made in cans. It was the neatest visual, and like I said, it won several awards. So Canstruction, an event that happens throughout the country. You should Google it, you should look it up, and if you have it in your city, and if you're in Atlanta and didn't take part in it this year, it happens in Atlanta, I know, in the fall, but in other cities it may happen at different times. You should definitely go look at these structures. They usually are on display next to each other somewhere in the city, and it is worth going to see. Because even, for instance, let's say when they did the soccer ball, so they can't color the labels. They cannot manipulate the cans in any way. So the labels on the cans are what they have to use for color structure. Like I said, the video game with the Space Invader, image in the cans, that had to be done strictly from the labels. I mean, it is so amazing what these architectural, you know, students as well as professionals put together for this. And I just feel like it doesn't get as much attention as it should, to be honest with you, because these are fantastic works of art that really need for people to see. And like I said, every one of these structures, all the materials, at the end of the week, it's usually on display for about a week or two, and then when it's done, the Atlanta Food Bank gets trucks of these cans right shipped to them. And then we feed, you know, families here in the Atlanta area and other cities. So Canstruction, I really think that it's a cool event. And if you're in a city that doesn't have Canstruction and wants to add Canstruction to your town, I think you should do that. So yeah, you can Google Canstruction. You can see it on Facebook, but really take a look at some of these amazing displays. You know what it reminds me of? If you've seen Legos, you know how Lego has taken their pieces and made incredible statues out of things. That's the same thing with this, but these are cans and they're not snapped together. You know, these people have to put these together in a way that they're balanced and they don't fall over. And it's just really amazing. So I recently emceed that event, and it just reminds me every year when I'm a part of it, I get so excited by it, because it just, I think so much of the people that put this together and are able to do this. We'll be back with more She Persisted here on the Progressive Voices Network. I'm Melissa Carter.
Try and get up every morning, day after day, and work for a living. Let's see him try that. Then we'll see who's the real tough guy. The working man is the tough guy.
With me, Joe Wilson, a wealth management advisor with a big money management house.
More money, yo money, Joe money.
We're happy to get the kind of money that jingles, but we'd rather get the kind that folds.
Not your grandpa's financial show.
What's going on, my money mavens and moolah misfits? It's me, your money guy, Joe Wilson of the Joe Knows Money Show, reporting live on Progressive Voices Network, delivering you 4 minutes of money news you can use. Trending this week in money news, a quarter of Americans cannot fix their teeth, according to the Federal Reserve's recent report on the well-being of U.S. households. That leads me to my next topic, 7 ways to save on dental care. Tip number 1, commit to preventive care. If you do not have dental coverage, paying out of pocket for cleanings can save you money down the line. Barring that, make sure you're still brushing and flossing carefully. The cheapest cavity is one you'll never get. Tip number 2, look for discounts. Brighter.com is the Groupon of dental care. It allows you to search for dentists in your area. It provides photos, summaries, and a rating system that links to Yelp. Best of all, Brighter offers substantial discounts on procedures and lets you know how much they'll cost in advance. Tip number 3, look for financing. Some dentists offer low or no interest financing plans. Some let patients create a budget plan and pay over 15 to 20 months instead of covering care all at once. Tip number 4, get a treatment plan in writing. Ask for a treatment plan in writing with an itemized list of costs and talk through these costs with your dentist or orthodontist to see if there might be a less expensive option. You can look up fair pricing for procedures in your area using Fair Health's free dental cost lookup tool. Tip number 5, visit a dental school. If you live near a dental school, find out if it offers free or inexpensive cleanings to the public. Students perform the work under the supervision of licensed dentists. Tip number 6, use flexible spending dollars. If your employer offers a flexible spending account, you can fund the account with pre-tax dollars to pay for out-of-pocket medical costs like dental work. However, you need to predict your costs for the year in advance so that you don't overfund the account and wind up losing unused money unless your employer offers a grace period or carryover option. Tip number 7, join a dental savings plan. For many seniors, these non-insurance membership programs can fill the dental gap in Medicare coverage. With a low-cost dental savings plan, you'll save anywhere from 10% to 60% off the regular cost of procedures. You can learn more about dental savings plans at consumerhealthalliance.org. Now it's time for Joe's Money Trap of the Day. While most dentists are ethical, it's smart to remember that a degree on the wall isn't a guarantee of honesty. Also, the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud advises parents to ask to remain in the treatment room while a child is in the dental chair. That way you can make sure that your child is safe and only the expected treatments are done. Here's Joe's money grab of the day. Thousands of uninsured Americans are traveling to Mexico every day for dental care they otherwise couldn't afford. Molar City provides dental care to uninsured Americans at a savings of up to 70% off procedures. A ceramic crown costs $340 and dentures start at $250. Most dentists in the town speak English and many receive training in the United States. And now it's time for Joe's quote of the day. When we talk about the healthcare crisis in America, we got to also be talking about the dental crisis and how to address it. That is a quote by Senator Bernie Sanders. You are listening to the Joe Knows Money Show on Progressive Voices Network. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Joe Knows Money to hear this and other 4-minute money news you can use segments.
You're listening to the Progressive Voices Network, and here's a clip from Tara Buster with comedian Tara Devlin from RDTDaily.com.
How low can they go? As far as Roy Moore is concerned, what does it matter if he molested children? They have bigger fish to fry. They need to destroy democracy. That's their ultimate goal. You know, and when a Republican says, we're just protecting children, that's when our red flags need to go up. Because what are they protecting them from? They're protecting them from having two loving parents that happen to be gay. But they're not protecting them from needlessly dying without health care. They're not protecting them from ignorance by funding education. They're not protecting them from getting gunned down when their parents take them to church. They're not really protecting children. And when Roy Moore says, well, why now? Why are they coming out now? That was 40 years ago. I have to say, you know, it's never really a good time for a pedophile. When a victim comes forward to report them, we really usually don't consider whether it fits into the perpetrator's schedule. But that's today's Republican Party, GOP, pedophiles, Putin, and plutocracy. All for plutocracy.
This is Tara Devlin from RDTDaily.com. That was a clip from my show, Tara Buster. Join us for the live recording every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern at FYINation.com or catch the replays starting Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Progressive Voices or anytime on demand on the Progressive Voices app. Support the Progressive Voices Network and tell your friends. Remember, we stick together, we win.
Did you know that the number one fear of Americans is public speaking? And you may share in that fear. And you may have done the research to see programs that are supposed to help you out, but they require you to go an entire weekend with a bunch of people that you're intimidated to get in front of and spend a lot of money. Well, guess what? You can do my online course called Speak Your Spirit. I designed it especially for shy people, and it only costs you $50. That's it. SpeakYourSpirit.com. Start sharing what you want to say. SpeakYourSpirit.com. Welcome back to She Persisted. I am your host, Melissa Carter. So are you a real estate agent or have you ever been a real estate agent? Because there are so many stories of what real estate agents have seen in the homes that they have to show. There's one real estate agent named Robin Rafe who posted on her website, robinrafe.com, some of the stories that she's seen as a real estate agent. One of them, she was showing a house. And they entered the bedroom and there was a used condom right there on the floor. So, yes, the homeowner had not cleaned up after themselves. Also, something else she saw, she talks about how she went into a home and the client, her client that was trying to sell the home, was exiting his shower totally naked while she had the clients walking in his house. And then another one where there were two teenagers that thought they were going to be home alone for the afternoon, obviously weren't, and then scrambled to find their clothes as she had apparently interrupted their session on the couch as they entered the house. Well, and most of those stories that Robin talks about, you know, have something to do with sex or nakedness or something. But there is another real estate agent, and this is a guy who posted a video of an animal that kept him trapped in the house that he was showing. And once you hear this snake that was keeping him inside, I'm shocked. I just listen.
What in the heck do I do with this? So I finish up my open house, go to step out the door, and there's this little rattlesnake outside. He's pretty little. He don't look too dangerous to me. I'm gonna stand up and see what he does. This is crazy. Maybe that's why I didn't have any traffic today.
Shit. And come, no, God, I can't imagine. Shit, I can't imagine that. If you're a real estate agent and you have to deal with that, you know what? I'm finding another job that day. Like, no way. No. There was one time, wasn't a snake. And this is embarrassing, but it's a true story. So when I had not moved to Atlanta yet. I was living in Knoxville, going to University of Tennessee, go Vols, even though we suck. And there was a friend that was living in Atlanta, and she had to house sit for another friend and invited me to come down and spend the weekend with her. Wink, wink. And so I went down to spend the weekend with her, and there was this house she was house sitting had two cats, and one of the cats was batshit crazy. Now, I'm a cat person. I have both dogs and cats, but if you asked me my preference, I would say cats all the way. I love cats. I could easily be a crazy cat person. However, this cat was crazy. It had been abused, bless its heart, and this couple had rescued this cat, and that cat scared the hell out of me, and I have never felt that way about cats, and I think I was even shocked. Like, she warned me that this cat might be a little temperamental, and I was like, oh, that's fine. It's cats. I love cats. This cat was so, I don't know how, just with all due respect, brain damaged to the point it was so moody. So it could go from just sitting to attacking in no time. So you know how a regular cat will sometimes, you know, if it'll pounce on you, or it'll, like, there'll be a little bit of aggression in a short amount of time, at a moment's notice, on a dime. Well, this cat, it was exaggerated to the point of, like, stray cat, rabid cat attack, going from sitting and being asleep. So when I came down to visit, my friend had to go to work, I think on that Friday. So I came down, I think, on Thursday night to spend the entire weekend. And so she had to go to work one of the days I was there, and I was there with the cat by myself. And why didn't I flee? I'm sure I had a car, but maybe I didn't feel like I could get to the car. I stayed holed up in the bedroom for half the day. And then when I just got so hungry, I had to come downstairs in the kitchen. I kid you not. I had to climb along the furniture and up on the countertops in order to get to the refrigerator. I'm not kidding. And then escape the same route in order to eat, because that cat was watching me like an assassin and was ready to literally attack me, making noises, hissing, and above and beyond. Like, the more I talk about it, the more silly it sounds, but I swear there's been one animal on this planet that I have crawled on countertops within a home to get around. So I didn't want to be eaten by this cat. So I would do that for a cat who had emotional issues. Imagine if a fucking rattlesnake was at the door of a house I was visiting. I mean, I'm assuming he survived. That was the end of the video. I mean, I'm sure he's fine. And then he talked about how, oh, it's a little rattlesnake. It doesn't look dangerous. Shit. No, it's a garden snake. And Melissa is going out the chimney. Do you understand? No. So God bless him and all the other real estate agents out there. If you're a real estate agent, I commend you for having to go into these random places, because I never really thought about that. If you work in an office space, you go to the same office every day. If you're a real estate agent, you are going into strange places on a daily basis. You are going into places that you have not been able to prepare for on a daily basis. Do you realize what you're asking your real estate agent to do? I mean, even if you're a taxi driver or a Lyft or Uber driver, you're in the same car every day. So you may have different people coming in and out your car, but at least it's the same car. When you're a real estate agent, no 2 days are alike. Maybe that's what you like about it, but No. All right, so... On that note, you know what? I'm still the person who looks in my toilet every time I hear those stories about snakes coming out of the toilet, like in the middle of the night when I have to pee in the middle of the night and I go to the bathroom. I have one of those those lights. Have you ever seen these motion lights? It hangs over the rim of your toilet, and it's battery operated. And when there's motion in the room, it turns on so you can see the bowl. And it's really nice and handy so that you don't have to turn the top light on. So if you're half asleep, it helps you find the toilet without you having to fully, you know, light up the room. But it also helps me see if there is a snake in my toilet. Well, another story I wanted to share with you comes from Halloween, and it's not too scary. It's not about real estate, but it has to do with the Joker. The Joker, obviously, from DC Comics, Batman's villain, the Joker, and in particular, Heath Ledger's portrayal of the Joker. Because a doctor in Tennessee, his name is Dr. Paul Locus, he is in Nashville, and he's an obstetrician, and he was working that day, and he wore his costume, which was Heath Ledger's Joker. Well, then his patient, Brittany Self, went into labor and was rushed to the hospital. So when Dr. Locus got to the hospital to meet Brittany, he reassured her, look, I know I look ridiculous, but I promise I'll change right before we go into the delivery room. Now, Brittany and her husband, Justin, told him not to bother, because Justin says that he thought, and they both thought, it would be pretty neat if their baby was delivered by the Joker. And I'm going to post these pictures on shepersistedshow.com, because I hope that their baby is a Batman fan in the future, because Dr. Locus, his outfit was pretty impressive. I mean, he looked very much like Heath Ledger. And I mean, he had the green wig, the white face paint, the sloppy red lipstick, the whole thing going on. And it is pretty scary when you see the pictures. Like, this was the delivery room. But we'll go ahead and post that. ShePersistedShow.com. Speaking of She Persisted, we're going to have more for you coming up next here on the Progressive Voices Network. I'm Melissa Carter.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises.
For WIN, I'm Joanne Powers. With the Republican majority in the state Senate voting last week to make Wisconsin the 28th state in the nation to call for an unprecedented national convention to rewrite the U.S. Constitution, Democrats and grassroots activists around the country are sounding the alarm that the future of the document, and therefore the country, is at stake. While a major focus for the GOP, which is currently in sole control of more than 30 state legislatures, six more states would have to pass similar resolutions in order to make a convention happen. Although ostensibly for the purpose of adding a balanced budget amendment, amendments to the Constitution have never before required a full constitutional convention, and non-Republicans are concerned that there is really no limit to what could be changed. Duke University history and public policy professor Nancy McLean fears the movement is intended to further the right-wing pro-corporation agenda of the Koch brothers and their allies.
I think that this is a long-term strategic plan on the part of the Koch donor network. I believe that they are doing it using the ideas developed by James McGill Buchanan. He considered all existing constitutions to be failures in not adequately protecting the corporations and wealthy minority from the ideas of their fellow citizens about what the common good in the public interest were.
McLean also says that even if the Constitution was limited to only the balanced budget amendment, it would be intended to bypass full Democratic scrutiny.
They are pushing for it using the language of a balanced budget amendment, which sounds reasonable to people on first blush. But what we've seen repeatedly when those balanced budget amendments came before Congress over the years, they did not pass because once economists and other citizens alerted the people to the fact that this could potentially endanger Social Security, Medicare, all the kinds of regulations of our air and water quality discrimination, all the other kinds of things Americans value, people backed away from it. And I think it's quite chilling that we're seeing this move through the states as dramatically and as rapidly as we are now, with 28 of the 34 states needed to call such a constitutional convention now in place.
Rideshare company Uber was greeted with another setback against its business model on Friday when a UK employment appeal tribunal upheld a lower ruling that drivers are workers under British law and therefore have the right to minimum wage and paid holidays. Uber and other rideshare companies have long tried to argue that workers are independent contractors without the various rights and labor protections of other workers. The judge did not accept this argument, noting that the workers could not make their own agreements with customers and had to follow company policy on how many rides to accept.
WIN is brought to you in part by the Amalgamated Transit Union, the largest labor union representing transit and allied workers in the U.S. and Canada. Online at atu.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit workersindependentnews.com.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that federal agents stormed the offices of the Industrial Workers of the World in New York City. They were looking for evidence connecting the organization to radical communists or anarchists. The ransacked office was part of the infamous Palmer Raids. When Attorney General Alexander Palmer responded to the growing Red Scare hysteria by raiding the offices of leftist organizations and arresting thousands. Hundreds of immigrants to the United States were deported during the raids without legal due process. The 1917 Russian Revolution had stoked fears about a spreading communist threat. Newspaper headlines helped to drum up public panic. A week before the IWW raid, a headline on the front page of the Evening World, published in New York City, declared, "Reds in U.S. plotted revolution. Deportation for all radicals." The day after the IWW raid, a Washington Post headline read, "Law to crush Reds." Writing in 1920, Attorney General Palmer warned, quote, "The chief appeal communism makes is to the worker. If they can lure the wage earner to join their own gang of thieves, if they can show him that he will be rich if he steals, so far they have succeeded in betraying him to their own criminal course." Palmer went on to describe how communists had, quote, "stirred discontent, caused irritating strikes, and infected our social ideas with the disease of their own minds and their unclean morals." Palmer's references to workers and irritating strikes demonstrate that he perceived the labor movement as part of the communist threat. Anti-communist hysteria took its toll on the most radical elements of the U.S. labor movement, especially the IWW.
Ever really think about what ideas can do? Well, then you realize the size of the thinker does not determine or even limit the size of the idea. Well, that's what my children's book is all about. It's called Whale of an Idea. And if you need a gift for a baby shower or a birthday, I would love for you to consider it. Whale of an Idea, available now online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Welcome back to She Persisted. I am your host, Melissa Carter. I want to say that before I had children, I was a woman who really didn't judge women in the workplace that did have children. Working mothers, I never had an issue with anybody having to leave because their kid was sick or doctor's appointments or anything, because I think we can all relate on being a kid. I mean, weren't you the kid that wished if you didn't have a parent who was fully accessible to you? I mean, I had the blessing of having a mother who was on call all the time. You know, she retired early from her teaching profession to take care of me because she had me late in life. And I didn't forget about the fact that anytime something went wrong, I never had to worry about finding my mother. And I think that if you were a child who couldn't get in touch with your mother or father, I'm sure there's a part of you that was frustrated by that and embarrassed by that and wished it was different. So that's where I came from before I had children, which is, you know, we can all relate to what it was like to be the child of a parent. So my opinion has not changed that much now that I have a child. I still do not feel superior to anybody else. I was told many times before I had a child that my opinion on parenting did not count because I didn't have children. So I do think there's a lot of women out there who, for some reason, find superiority within being a mother. And I think that you really need to check yourself if you're that way, because it doesn't make you superior. And if you feel that way or projecting that, then you got something to prove and you need to figure out what that is. So I still do not believe that there's an imbalance among women, regardless of whether you're a working mom, stay-at-home mom, mother, not mother. However, I do think that when it comes to parenting, if I was biased about something, it is the fact that women should be rewarded for that job, especially if they make the sacrifice of stopping what they do for a living or become less ambitious because of it. And that has changed since I became a mother, because I have always been an ambitious woman. I still continue to be an ambitious woman. And my son's other mother is an ambitious woman. So we relate on that. But I do see for the both of us that there is a change in the way we go about our business because of our son. And it's because you were having to, and I'm trying to explain without sounding cliche, because again, I'm preaching to the choir of women who are mothers, but if you're not a mother, you know, I never want any woman to feel marginalized on this show, because if you're not a mother, it doesn't matter. I mean, I want to be able to have conversations like this and you still be interested, you know, because I do think there are some women who, when they talk about their kids, it's an instant, you know, turn off and an instant button click. And maybe you've done that with me, but I certainly am sensitive to the needs of those who don't have children who are listening. But I do think that my opinion has changed on that, because that is a massive amount of work that you are doing that you lose credibility within your profession when you leave. So the way American culture works is that we grind so much that it's like we're on this rapid, and if we exit for any reason, we become less valuable. And that's for men and women. But consistently, if anybody decides to have a family, it is the woman that makes the sacrifice at work and not the man. Hopefully, I think that should change too. But we still have this divide when it comes to the care of our child, that it's mostly the mother and that she's the one that makes the sacrifice when it comes to taking care of a child at home. And that's fine. But our society needs to reward that, whoever, man or woman. And maybe it's going to take men to leave work to take care of their kid for this to change, because guys aren't going to put up with being lesser than because he's home taking care of the kid and not in the work. Women, I just hate to see women have to do that and not be rewarded for it. And the reason I'm talking about this, and we'll continue to talk about it after this clip, but Michelle Pfeiffer was on the Today Show recently. Now, Michelle Pfeiffer, one of the biggest movie stars at one point in all kinds of movies, and somebody that I just totally had a huge crush on. Then she disappeared, and she just reemerged recently. I believe it was Dark Shadows was the first time that I saw Michelle Pfeiffer return to the big screen. Ironically, she did that movie with Johnny Depp, and then her latest is also with Johnny Depp, which is Murder on the Orient Express. So she was on the Today Show plugging that movie, and she talked about why she had disappeared for a while and her reemergence.
You know, I wish I could really take credit for making this big sort of sacrifice and choice, but it sort of just evolved, you know. It just sort of my priorities maybe shifted, and, you know, we moved out of Los Angeles, and it just became, the older the kids got, it became more and more difficult to actually say yes. I became pickier and pickier, and, well, where does it shoot? When does it shoot?
You didn't want to be away from
your kids.
How long
will I be away? Yeah. And at some point, I became unhirable. And that was really the real reason why it hadn't worked. And then time just went and kind of flew by. And even, it was actually one of my children who said to me one day, "Mom, are you ever going to go back to work?" And which kind of hurt my feelings. And
you're like, "What have I been doing this whole time?"
What do you mean? And then when they started applying for colleges, I thought, okay, it is time.
First, let me say that my mother has a term where she says she hates silly. Like, don't be silly. Doesn't like silly talk. Doesn't like people to act silly. And she would have thought that reporter was acting silly because she giggled through that entire quote, especially when Michelle Pfeiffer said, "And I was unhirable." And the woman, like, cackled at that. That wasn't funny. But anyway, so Michelle doesn't talk about how she, you know, she consciously made the sacrifice to do that for her children. But I think her journey is the same journey that a lot of women who have children make. They change their priorities. And when I talked about Katie and I changing the way we do business because of our son, you know, I am much more picky about my experience within my profession. And I think that, you know, my profession of radio, broadcast radio, when I was in it, and I just couldn't tolerate things that I might have tolerated when I was younger. And I think it's because I had had something to compare it to. Like, I'm making a sacrifice to be away from my son, to be here. And if the pay is not right, if the experience is not right, if the respect level is not right, then I can't justify it. So I think the sacrifice is, you know, being away from my child, who I emotionally am in love with and enjoy. And, you know, even when I'm exhausted, it is such a rewarding experience. And for me to be at work, which should also be as rewarding, if it not maybe as rewarding, but close to being rewarding. I want it to be that same level. I want there to be a balance. If I'm away from him, then I should be enjoying myself and doing my best to serve my colleagues and my team as well as my listeners. And if it's not that, then I won't do it. And so I think that a lot of women go through the same thing, that their tolerance level has decreased. I'm not going to put up with this anymore because I have something else that's more important and more fulfilling to do. But the problem is, though, you don't get paid to be a mother. My first gut reaction is we should be rewarded for this. Like, society really should honor anybody who leaves a profession or leaves the workforce in order to do something of a higher calling. Let's put it that way, because the more I talk about it, the more I realize that women, because they're so self-sacrificial, that I think sometimes when a child comes into their life, that is why, number one, some handle it irresponsibly and, you know, become superior or feel superior than others. But I think it's the first time in their life that there's something that they have that is emotional and spiritually fulfilling for them that they weren't able to do for themselves on their own without their child. And so it's funny, because the thought I had as I was speaking was that we don't fight for ourselves enough. I never had the same tolerance level or lack of tolerance for something that was disrespectful to me. So I just said that I think about the sacrifice I'm making being away from my son, being at work, and is it worth it? And now I realize, as a woman, we should have been doing that from the very start. Is it worth my time from being away from me and doing what I want to do, regardless of what that is, to be here? We don't fight for ourselves, but yet we'll fight for that child. And men have done a better job of fighting for themselves within that profession, to fight for things that make them happy in that profession, to negotiate things that make them want to go to that job instead of going to another job. What is the solution to this? By being an older mother, I fight not, you know, I fight against the thought of, well, it's too late for me because I'm older. But one thing that I wish we could do as women, that there was almost like a pregnancy plan, and not just a pregnancy plan for wearing a condom or taking your birth control pills when you're 16, that we created a pregnancy plan for teenage girls to where you invest money. So that way you start becoming an investor as a teenager, so that by the time you decide that you are going to have a child, that you have some financial security so that if you do have to leave the workforce or choose to leave the workforce at any period of time, that you don't feel the pressure of, you know, unemployment because you already have that nest egg, that, you know, whether it's investing or whether it's in starting your own business. But I think that I'm reading this book now talking about the difference between being an employee and someone who works for themselves, which is still an employee. Even if you are a freelancer, you are still an employee. Or if you started your own business that you're working at, you're still an employee. But if you, you know, begin a business that you sell, or begin a business system that you don't have to work in order to make money, or you are an investor in such systems, then that's a whole different category. So that's the book I'm reading now. That's why I'm thinking, oh my God, is it too late for me? But anyway, but it made me think that for women, we should have a pregnancy plan, because most women are going to decide to try to have a family. There are women who don't, absolutely, and that's totally fine. But the majority of women usually at least talk about the fact that they are thinking about being a mother at some point in their life. So they should be told and taught at a certain age how to be self-sufficient financially in order to be able to do that and not feel the brute punishment that a lot of women feel when they do that. Because I've had friends who were pregnant and did job interviews and lied about being pregnant because they didn't want to be overlooked for that job, because they knew that the hiring manager wouldn't hire them because they were pregnant. I mean, businesses look at pregnancy as a malfunction, as a deficit, as something that they don't want to have to deal with because it costs them money. And it's just that environment that is so frustrating. And then coupled with that, the women who change the way they do things because of their children. And so it is frustrating to see women consistently be punished for doing something they want to do. And so, again, that's something that I'm sure that I would have been empathetic to when I wasn't a mother. But now that I'm a mother and I find myself making those same choices and knowing that it potentially is going to damage my professional career because of it, it is I'm much more sensitive to it now. All women should have an investment plan, and all women should be taught money at such a young age. I was never taught money. I was taught how to handle and balance a checking account or a checkbook, but I was never taught about stocks and bonds and investments and starting your own business and doing all those things. I was never taught that. I don't know if my brother was. I'm assuming that there was much more conversation about money to him than there ever was to me. But I do think that, yes, when you are talking to your daughters about getting pregnant, you shouldn't just send them to the doctor to get birth control pills. You should also start an account for your child and teach them about investing, or teach them about, I mean, serious money, not just a savings account that gets a fraction of a percentage interest. I'm talking about serious money advice so that they can be millionaires and billionaires just like their male counterparts and have a family without having to worry about it, without having to worry about how much time they take off, and not have to worry about who's going to look at them differently at work, and worry about if their husband still has respect for them because they're not working. Because I'm telling you, man, money equals respect in this country, whether it's justified or not. And there's a lot of couples who have problems within their relationship because that man doesn't respect his wife anymore when she's a stay-at-home mom. I mean, let's go down memory lane for a second. If your school was like my school, what did your school do to prepare you for being a mom? Because a lot of home ec classes, I mean, old school mentality there. I mean, home ec having its roots at a time where they were prepping women to be housewives. And again, if that's what you want to do, then that's great. But not all women want to be housewives. And in the home ec department, the way that they taught women to, and guys that took the class too, which were few and far between, but the way they taught them on how to be a parent was the egg. Did they do the egg thing in your school? Where I didn't take the class, but I had friends that were in this class and they had to carry an egg around, a boiled egg, for I think a week, at least a couple days. And they had to have that egg with them at all times. And they had to do everything they could to make sure that egg didn't get cracked. And that was a test, or at least an example, of what it was going to be like to be a mom. And I mean, basically, they're trying to tell you that you have to be on all the time and you have to be aware of this being all the time. But their preparation for girls to be pregnant was the egg. And my argument is that all you're doing? I mean, the sewing and the cooking and the carrying the boiled egg around is all good. But what about money? Why are we not and it's the same theme that I say on the show all the time about your husband is not your financial investment. You know, if you want to have children, I mean, obviously, if you're straight and want to have children, you want to be with the father of your child. Absolutely. Of course you do. A coupling should be based in love and affection and caring and some attraction, and not based in money and the fact that he's going to take care of you for the rest of your life, because that's the trap that some of our mothers and grandmothers got caught up in. And we have to stop that cycle. You have to be financially independent as a woman without anybody else helping you out. You have to learn as a woman to not ask your parents for money and to ask your husband for money. You've got to learn to be able to be the person who lets other people borrow money. And you have to be the bank. And I don't think many women think about being the bank. And that's part of the mentality we have to change. If we really want equality and fighting for it, and the she persisted and all that goes with it, and everything you want in your life, children or not, you have to be self-sufficient and bring that to the table. And then you're going to get far more rewards on every level if you do that. And I think for women who are trying to emotionally be satisfied in things, money is a hard thing for us to have to be emotional about, because a lot of times it's either boring or it seems petty or it seems small. But at the end of the day, you have to learn the game to be able to get what you want out of it. Coming up next is my can of crazy. We're going to lighten things up a little bit and talk about one police force in Georgia who tried so hard to solve a series of crimes, and they finally did. I mean, it was a wave of vandalism. Who was the culprit? I'm going to tell you. And there's a reason they're in my can of crazy. Next, here on Progressive Voices Network, I'm Melissa Carter.
You're listening to the Progressive Voices Network, and here's a clip from Tara Buster with comedian Tara Devlin from RDTDaily.com.
How low can they go? As far as Roy Moore is concerned, what does it matter if he molested children? They have bigger fish to fry. They need to destroy democracy. That's their ultimate goal. You know, and when a Republican says, we're just protecting children, that's when our red flags need to go up. Because what are they protecting them from? They're protecting them from having two loving parents that happen to be gay. But they're not protecting them from needlessly dying without health care. They're not protecting them from ignorance by funding education. They're not protecting them from getting gunned down when their parents take them to church. They're not really protecting children. And when Roy Moore says, well, why now? Why are they coming out now? That was 40 years ago. I have to say, you know, it's never really a good time for a pedophile when a victim comes forward to report them. We really usually don't consider whether it fits into the perpetrator's schedule. But that's today's Republican Party, GOP, pedophiles, Putin, and plutocracy. All for plutocracy.
This is Tara Devlin from RDTDaily.com. That was a clip from my show, Tara Buster. Join us for the live recording every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern at FYINation.com, or catch the replays starting Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Progressive Voices, or anytime on demand on the Progressive Voices app. Support the Progressive Voices Network and tell your friends. Remember, we stick together, we win.
Try and get up every morning, day after day, and work for a living. Let's see him try that. Then we'll see who's the real tough guy. The working man is the tough guy.
With me, Joe Wilson, a wealth management advisor with a big money management house.
Mo money, yo money, Joe money.
We're happy to get the kind of money that jingles, but we'd rather get the kind that folds.
Not your grandpa's financial show.
What's going on, my money mavens and moolah misfits? It's me, your money guy, Joe Wilson of the Joe Knows Money Show. Reporting live on Progressive Voices Network. delivering you 4 minutes of money news you can use. Trending this week in money news, a quarter of Americans cannot fix their teeth, according to the Federal Reserve's recent report on the well-being of U.S. households. That leads me to my next topic, 7 ways to save on dental care. Tip number one, commit to preventive care. If you do not have dental coverage, paying out of pocket for cleanings can save you money down the line. Barring that, make sure you're still brushing and flossing carefully. The cheapest cavity is one you'll never get. Tip number two, look for discounts. Brighter.com is the Groupon of dental care. It allows you to search for dentists in your area. It provides photos, summaries, and a rating system that links to Yelp. Best of all, Brighter offers substantial discounts on procedures and lets you know how much they'll cost in advance. Tip number three, look for financing. Some dentists offer low or no interest financing plans. Some let patients create a budget plan and pay over 15 to 20 months instead of covering care all at once. Tip number four, get a treatment plan in writing. Ask for a treatment plan in writing with an itemized list of costs and talk through these costs with your dentist or orthodontist to see if there might be a less expensive option. You can look up fair pricing for procedures in your area using Fair Health's free dental cost lookup tool. Tip number five, visit a dental school. If you live near a dental school, find out if it offers free or inexpensive cleanings to the public. Students perform the work under the supervision of licensed dentists. Tip number six, use flexible spending dollars. If your employer offers a flexible spending account, you can fund the account with pre-tax dollars to pay for out-of-pocket medical costs like dental work. However, you need to predict your costs for the year in advance so that you don't overfund the account and wind up losing unused money unless your employer offers a grace period or carryover option. Tip number seven, join a dental savings plan. For many seniors, these non-insurance membership programs can fill the dental gap in Medicare coverage. With a low-cost dental savings plan, you'll save anywhere from 10% to 60% off the regular cost of procedures. You can learn more about dental savings plans at consumerhealthalliance.org. Now it's time for Joe's Money Trap of the Day. While most dentists are ethical, it's smart to remember that a degree on the wall isn't a guarantee of honesty. Also, the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud advises parents to ask to remain in the treatment room while a child is in the dental chair. That way you can make sure that your child is safe and only the expected treatments are done. Here's Joe's Money Grab of the Day. Thousands of uninsured Americans are traveling to Mexico every day for dental care they otherwise couldn't afford. Molar City provides dental care to uninsured Americans at a savings of up to 70% off procedures. A ceramic crown costs $340 and dentures start at $250. Most dentists in the town speak English and many receive training in the United States. And now it's time for Joe's quote of the day. When we talk about the healthcare crisis in America, we gotta also be talking about the dental crisis and how to address it. That is a quote by Senator Bernie Sanders. You are listening to the Joe Knows Money Show on Progressive Voices Network. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Joe Knows Money to hear this and other 4 minute money news you can use segments.
Whether you are in or out of town on New Year's Day, I invite you to simply watch the Rose Bowl Parade on January 1st. Why? Because I have the honor as a kidney transplant recipient of riding on the Donate Life Float thanks to my sponsor, Atlantis Piedmont Healthcare. What a cool experience to be in the Rose Bowl Parade. And you can find out more, see what the float looks like, and even become an organ donor at DonateLifeFloat.org. That's DonateLifeFloat.org.
One, two, three, four.
Normal people, stupid things. Today's entry comes out of Georgia, where police there have identified the culprits behind a recent wave of vandalized side view car mirrors. When more than a dozen drivers in the town of Snellville had their side mirrors smashed, suspicion initially fell on local kids. Oh, those kids! Police sent out extra patrols to the neighborhood, but then a local resident spotted a woodpecker furiously tapping at the car mirror, apparently because it mistook its reflection for a rival bird. This is the quote from Snellville Police. We suspect that this case is solved. Congratulations to the people of Snellville for blaming the kids. Why is it always the kids' fault? And you made it into my can of crazy. one last story that probably should go in the can of crazy, but it is about Black Friday. And sure enough, someone is already in line in the great state of Texas. So here is coverage of this gentleman from KGNS-TV.
We are 15 days away from Black Friday, but that's not stopping one man from doing all he can to be first in line at the Laredo Best Buy. If you've been there over the past few days, you may have noticed a tent set up right outside the doorway. That's one man claiming his spot as the first person in line for all those Black Friday deals. When the day finally arrives, he'll have been in line for 17 days. Now, while he was a little camera shy when we went by to talk to him, he did answer a few questions for us off camera.
I look forward to this time of year because I know I have to set up, I know I have to wait, I watch people pass by, I wait for my friends to arrive to shop. We've really become good friends. The majority of the people I know that are in line are friends of mine. These people are from Monterrey. They're from Mexico. We know each other because every year we do this at this store.
Well, he says he's been coming out to wait in line at this store for 6 years now, and he's usually first or second in line. When we asked him what he's going to do over the next 15 days, he says watch TV, listen to the news, and watch the people pass by.
So I've got a few thoughts on that, but one that is prevalent is Best Buy. Why, if this guy is on your doorstep for weeks at a time, for 6 years in a row, that you can't hook this guy up? I don't understand. You can't reward. I mean, that's your, but I don't know why I get sucked into these stories, because they're just trying to get attention. Just trying to get attention, but somebody is already in line for Black Friday. Ladies, I think that we have to take some responsibility for this because, you know, shopping, getting the best deals and all that stuff is our territory. That's usually what we're really good at. And we have created this culture of Black Friday steals and deals and getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to do it. I guess I shouldn't be upset because I contributed to this culture, even though I can tell you I have never gotten up and camped out or done anything on Black Friday. I'm lucky to get out and go shopping on Black Friday. And if I do, it's in the afternoon just to get out of the house. But I've never participated in this melee that is called shopping on Black Friday. And quite honestly, I'm embarrassed when the rest of the world gets to see footage of Black Friday. Here's the American holiday of Thanksgiving, and what do? We're trampling over each other and camping out around a store on the sidewalk and promoting this shopping thing. And how that's all we think about. So there you go. Thank you so much for joining me again today. She persisted on the Progressive Voices Network. I know that sometimes I am by myself in the way I feel about things, and that's okay. I hope you have a fantastic day. And you can always catch us social media at Melissa Carter, Twitter at Melissa Carter ATL, if I can say my own name, 1L 2S's, at Melissa Carter ATL on Facebook and on Instagram. You can always catch us online, shepersistedshow.com. You can subscribe to the podcast there. You can also do it on iTunes. Please, if you're already on iTunes, just click on our podcast, subscribe to it, and like it, and we would love it. So I've gotten in the habit at the end of the show to always talk about how you need to do something for yourself today, because the theme, we keep talking about how self-sacrificial women are and that sometimes you forget about yourself and the busyness of life. And so just a reminder to do something for yourself. Something else that I tend to do is clip quotes. I don't know if you're a quote type person, but I love seeing what other people have said because I think that history especially, I think, is a great teacher, so that you can, you know, people have been through shit. So you should listen to people who've been through stuff and then maybe grab some inspiration from them. And so at the end of the show, I think I'm going to start giving quotes from other women that might help you through the day. It might help you achieve something that might make you feel good about yourself. So today's quote is from Margaret Thatcher. And in it, she says, "If you set out to be liked, you would be prepared to compromise on anything at any time. And you would achieve nothing." Again, if you set out to be liked, you would be prepared to compromise on anything at any time. And you would achieve nothing. Hopefully that will inspire you today to speak your own voice to yourself and to hear what you have to say and then respond to it. Do something. Do something just for you. I certainly hope you have a fantastic Wednesday, and I will see you first thing tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Bye-bye.